The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello and welcome to Heard Any Good Books Lately? A program from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. I'm George Douglas. This program is brought to you by Friends of the North Carolina Library for the Blind and Physically Handicapped, an organization of citizens, volunteers, and patrons all interested in supporting the library and the services it provides. The Friends Group was founded in 1989 and now has more than 300 members across North Carolina. If you'd like to join the Friends Group yourself, we'll have information on how to do that later in this program. This program is all about books, with special emphasis on those available from the North Carolina Library for the Blind. The library has more than 86,000 titles in its collection. Books and magazines are available in large print, braille, and talking books as well. The library now has more than 11,000 patrons across the state. If you're not a patron but are interested in becoming one, I'll have more information at the end of this program. Now, this time, we'll take a look at some of the most popular books checked out at the North Carolina Library for the Blind during March and April 2019. Let's begin by taking a look at one of the most popular books in the last couple of months. It's called The Feral Detective by Jonathan Lethem. Here's the plot. Phoebe Siegler first meets Charles Heist in a shabby trailer in the desert outside of Los Angeles. Now, she's on a quest to find her friend's missing daughter, Arabella, and hears that Heist is preternaturally good at finding people who don't want to be found. A loner who keeps his pet possum in a desk drawer, Heist has a laconic, enigmatic nature that intrigues the sarcastic and garrulous Phoebe. It takes some convincing, but he agrees to help her. The unlikely pair traverse California's stunning inland empire, navigating the enclaves of hippies and vagabonds who aim to live off the grid. They learn that these outcasts exist in warring tribes, the rabbits and the bears, and that Arabella is likely caught in the middle. As Phoebe tries to delicately extricate her, she realizes that Heist has a complicated history with these strange groups, and that they're all in grave danger. Jonathan Lethem's first detective novel since Motherless Brooklyn delivers the same memorable delights, ecstatic wordplay, warm and deeply felt characters, and an offbeat sense of humor, combined with a vision of California that is at once scruffy and magnificent. The Feral Detective emerges as a transporting, comic, and absolutely unforgettable novel. Once again, that's called The Feral Detective, F-E-R-A-L, Detective, and it's by the author Jonathan Lethem. Now let's move on to another author who is always one of the most popular at the Library for the Blind, and this one is, of course, Stuart Woods, and this is a book entitled Desperate Measures. Here is the plot for this one. A killer is stalking petite blonde women on Manhattan's East Side in Edgar Winter Woods' diverting 47th novel featuring New York lawyer Stone Barrington. Now, one intended victim, Faith Barnacle, whom Stone recently hired as his personal pilot, manages to elude the unknown killer by crashing through a window of the seedy Lexington Avenue hotel where he's held her captive. Luckily, she falls into a dumpster and suffers only minor injuries. Meanwhile, Stone assists a wealthy heiress he meets by chance with securing a divorce from her no-good husband, the book's other villain. Dino Pacetti, Stone's police commissioner pal, lends a helping hand as needed. And as usual, Woods keeps the tone light, as shown by the many pages devoted to the flirtatious banter between Stone and the book's several attractive and available women. Now, at the end, he surprises the reader by not neatly tying up every thread. Series fans will be satisfied, but those who prefer realistic police procedurals will have to look elsewhere. And that's a book called Desperate Measures, written by the very popular author Stuart Woods. Now let's move on to a new book by Danielle Steele. This one is called Past Perfect. Here's the plot for this one. A magical tale of a modern family sharing a gorgeous Pacific Heights mansion with their ghostly, elegant predecessors. Sybil and Blake Gregory are the quintessential 21st century power couple. Now, she's a cutting-edge interior designer. He's a forward-thinking top business analyst. They revel in the privileged, ordered life they lead in Manhattan with their children, teenagers Andrew and Caroline, and six-year-old Charlie. But when Blake accepts a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to become the CEO of a visionary social media startup in San Francisco, and then buys a magnificent turn-of-the-20th-century Pacific Heights mansion on impulse, all that will change. Built by the Butterfields, a prominent banking family, abandoned for decades, the grand house retains its exquisite furnishings and aura of long-ago elegance. And that's not all it retains. The modern Gregories are about to meet their ghostly, long-ago counterparts. Sounds like a good one. It's called Past Perfect, and it's by Danielle Steele. Now here's a book about North Carolina, actually. It's called The Highland Scots of North Carolina from 1732 to 1776, and it's by Duane Gilbert Meyer, and it was one of the most popular books in the last couple of months at the Library for the Blind, and it's unusual to have a non-fiction type book in this category. So here's what it's all about. Author Meyer addresses himself principally to two questions in this book. Why did many thousands of Scottish Highlanders emigrate to America in the 18th century? And why did the majority of them rally to the defense of the crown? Offers the most complete and intelligent analysis of them that has appeared so far. And that is a comment from the William and Mary Quarterly in reviewing this book. Using a variety of original sources, official papers, travel documents, diaries, and newspapers, Duane Meyer presents an impressively complete reconstruction of the settlement of the Highlanders in North Carolina. He examines their motives for migration, their life in America, and their curious political allegiance to King George III. It sounds like a fascinating book of history about North Carolina. Again, it's entitled The Highland Scots of North Carolina, 1732 to 1776, by Duane Gilbert Meyer. Now here's another book about North Carolina that was very popular last month as well. This one is called Bryson City Takes, Stories of a Doctor's First Year, and it's by Walt Larimore. Captivating stories of how a young doctor's first year of medical practice in the Smoky Mountains shaped his practice of life and faith, the little mountain hamlet of Bryson City, North Carolina, offers more than dazzling vistas. For Walt Larimore, a young Flatlander physician setting up his first practice, the town presents its peculiar challenges as well. With the winsomeness of a James Herriot book, Bryson City Tales sweeps you into a world of colorful characters. The texture of Smoky Mountain life and the warmth, humor, quirks, and the struggles of a small country town. It's a world where the family doctor is also the emergency physician, the coroner, and the obstetrician, and where wilderness medicine is part of the job. Search and rescue calls in the national forest are a way of life, and the next patient just may be somebody's livestock or pet. Bryson City Tales is the tender and insightful chronicle of a young man's rite of passage from medical student to family physician. Laughter and adventure await you in these pages and lessons learned from Bryson City's unforgettable residents. If you're a resident of North Carolina or you're a newcomer to North Carolina, I think you would probably really enjoy this book. Again, it's called Bryson City Takes, Stories of a Doctor's First Year, and it's by Walt Larimore. Now let's take a look at a book called The Passerby, and that's a novel by Thomas Ray Crowell. Here's the plot. Penn County, Indiana, 1986, 11-year-old Trudy Bryce is strangled to death in her home 2 weeks before Christmas. The crime goes unsolved. 20 years later, writer Ray Krause is looking for material for his next book and is mysteriously drawn to the little girl's gravesite. When Ray approaches the girl's mother to ask if she would like to know who killed her daughter, she tells him they know, a term professional investigators say people use when they know who the they is. Well, haunted by Trudy's spirit and believing that she deserves no less, Ray and his friend and publicist, Kick Jenton, set out on a long and trying 2-year investigation to find her killer. In a community where folks leave their doors unlocked, share their supper, keep an eye out for each other, Ray discovers the townsfolk have different theories about who committed the crime and mixed feelings about discussing it. Some are reluctant to cooperate, though a handful eventually join Ray to put the pieces of the crime puzzle together. Refusing to look at Ray's new and damning evidence, the Penn County Sheriff's Department continues to point an accusing finger at an Englishman who Ray discovers was out of the country at the time of the murder. The department quickly informs retired officers not to talk to the writer. With that, the cold case murder of Trudy Bryce is left back in the writer's hands. Sorting through interviews, public information files, and newspaper stories filled with details of the day of the crime, and listening to rumors upon rumors, Ray eventually narrows his list to several suspects and finally to one key suspect, a man who still lives amongst them, a man whose family has been in the community for at least 3 generations. It wasn't chance or serendipity that led Ray to him. It was divine intervention. Determined to push forward in the investigation on his own, Ray contacts the man he believes to be the girl's killer. Can Ray convince the killer to step forward and confess? Inspired by true events, The Passerby has all the twists and turns of a cold case murder investigation, but with an entirely unique and powerful ending. Once again, the title of that book is The Passerby, a novel by Thomas Ray Crowell. And you're listening to Heard Any Good Books Lately, a production of the Triangle Radio Reading Service. I'm George Douglas. Thanks so much for joining me today. I hope you're enjoying this program. Right now, we're going to turn to another book that has some regional interest here. This is a book called Between the Creeks, by My Sapony Adventures, by Roy A. Cooper, Jr. And by the way, if the name sounds familiar, Roy A. Cooper, Jr. is actually the late father of our current governor, Roy Cooper, in North Carolina. Here's the detail about this book. Roy A. Cooper, Jr. set out to tell the stories of growing up in the country in the late 1920s and 1930s. Now, in doing so, he has accomplished much more than that. His collection of tales about growing up between the creeks speaks to continuity of values across generations, values passed down from parents to children to grandchildren. Readers are transported back to a time when life was hard, but love of friends and family ran deep. Humorous and heartwarming, sad and reflective, these stories enable us to experience the fear of witnessing a fire in the tobacco barn, along with the elation of capturing a hive of honeybees. From the humility and appreciation he learned from the young man who helped him find the school outhouse, to the heartbreak of losing his first pet, to the sense of responsibility he developed as his father taught him to take on more of the adult chores around the farm, each of Cooper's stories brings with it a lesson for both children and adults about values and priorities. The lessons of love and responsibility, of respect and determination, still resonate today. Through his storytelling, Roy A. Cooper, Jr. has put into words the life lessons he and others in his generation learned, often the hard way, that serve as guideposts throughout life. This sounds like a book that just about anybody of a certain age might really enjoy, particularly if you are a resident of North Carolina or any other place in the region here. It's called Between the Creeks. My Saponey, that's S-A-P-O-N-Y, maybe that's Saponey, I might be mispronouncing that, Adventures by Roy A. Cooper, Jr. That book was very popular last month at the North Carolina Library for the Blind. In fact, it was one of the top 10 most popular books last month, and I think you might enjoy it, so put that on your to-do list to read that one. Now, let's get back to a novel here. This is one that's entitled No Traveler Returns, and it's by Louis L'Amour, a prolific and very popular writer. Louis L'Amour's long-lost first novel, faithfully completed by his son, takes readers on a voyage into danger and violence on the high seas. Fate is a ship. As the shadows of World War II gather, the SS Lichenfield is westbound across the Pacific, carrying 80,000 barrels of highly explosive naphtha. The cargo alone makes the journey perilous, with the entire crew aware that one careless moment could lead to disaster. But yet another sort of peril haunts the Lichenfield. Even beyond their day-to-day existence, the lives of the crew are mysteriously intertwined. Though each has its own history, dreams and jealousies, longing and rage, all are connected by a deadly web of chance and circumstance. Some are desperately fleeing the past. Others chase an unknown destiny. A few are driven by the desire for adventure, while their shipmates cling to the Lichenfield as their only true home. In their hearts, these men, as well as the women and children they have left behind, carry the seeds of salvation or destruction. And all of them, kind or cruel, strong or broken, are bound to the fate of the vessel that carries them toward an ever-darkening horizon. And this was inspired by Louis L'Amour's own experiences as a merchant seaman. No Traveler Returns is a revelatory work by a world-renowned author and a brilliant illustration of a writer discovering his literary voice. This is really quite unique and unusual. I had not heard about this first novel of Louis L'Amour's. It's normally he's an author that I associate with more of the Western novels and that type of thing, but this one is clearly not that. And so it sounds like an interesting one. It's called No Traveler Returns by Louis L'Amour. Next, we're going to go back to an author that we talked about a little bit earlier. This is another book that was extremely popular in the last couple of months at the North Carolina Library for the Blind. This is called A Delicate Touch, and once again, it's by Stuart Woods. Stone Barrington uncovers a societal minefield in this exhilarating adventure from the number one New York Times bestselling author Stuart Woods. Here's the plot. When an old acquaintance reaches out to Stone Barrington requesting assistance, the job seems easy enough. She needs an expert in an esoteric field, someone with both the knowledge and the careful dexterity to solve a puzzle. But the solution to one small problem blows the lid open on a bigger scandal going back decades, and involving numerous prominent New Yorkers who would prefer the past stay buried. With this explosive information in hand, Stone Barrington is caught between a rock and a hard place, his only options either to play it safe, to the detriment of others, or to see justice done and risk fatal exposure. But when it comes to Stone Barrington, danger is usually just around the corner, so he may as well throw caution to the wind, and indeed he does in this novel called A Delicate Touch by Stuart Woods. Now let's look at another novel made by a very, very big name in the business. In fact, I heard an interview with this fellow recently, and they said he has sold more than 350 million books. That might give away who it is. Of course, I'm talking about James Patterson, and this is a book entitled Liar, Liar. Here's the plot. Detective Harriet Blue returns in her biggest thriller yet, in the instant New York Times bestseller. With her life on the line, Harriet has to do unspeakable things and making her a very good cop gone very bad. Now, in the space of a week, she has committed theft and fraud, resisted arrest, assaulted a police officer, and is considered a dangerous fugitive from the law. It's all because of one man, Regan Banks. He viciously killed the only person in the world who matters to Harriet, and he plans to kill her next. As she recklessly speeds toward the dark side and finally crosses it, Harriet won't stop until Regan pays for the many lives he has taken. It sounds like another good thriller by the very, very popular author James Patterson, and that book is called Liar, Liar. Now a little bit of a change of pace here. Here's another book that is not a novel, and it's one that's relatively new and now available at the North Carolina Library for the Blind. It's about a very popular musician whose name I'm sure you know, Bill Monroe, and the book is called Bill Monroe, The Life and Music of the Bluegrass Man by Tom Ewing. Here's a summary of this book. I think you'll enjoy it. A bandmate recalls the life of Bill Monroe, which was from 1911 to 1996, perhaps the best-known popularizer of bluegrass in American musical history. Guitar, mandolin, banjo, stand-up bass, and a high, lonesome yowl, those are the classic elements of bluegrass codified by the man from Kentucky. As so often happened, that highly stylized variant of country music was the product of the big city, courtesy of a Chicago-based radio program that propelled Monroe to early fame. Ewing, the author of this book and the editor of the Bill Monroe Reader in the year 2000, who played guitar with Monroe for a decade, serves up a deep-dish version of bluegrass history that is not for the uninitiated. He writes in a typical passage of an influential forerunner of Monroe's, quote, who owned and played a snakehead A4, but who usually picked a mandola or tenor banjo, and whose musicianship and style had a definite impact on Bill. Well, if you don't know that a snakehead A4 was a kind of mandolin made by Gibson in the 1920s, then you'll be forgiven for being a little bit lost in this one, but this is the kind of book whose readers will have command over the bluegrass arsenal. Without saying as much, the author shows how Monroe pioneered the festival circuit, jump-starting the famed Brown County Jamboree in Indiana. Though a purist in many ways, Monroe was also a pioneer of modern technology, perhaps the first major bluegrass musician to record digitally. You can do several takes in a row and combine the best parts of each performance later, explained his producer. Ewing also offers casual, unlabored portraits of other key players in the bluegrass scene who admired one another while nursing deeply competitive streaks, as when Monroe expressed some pique when the music magazine Sing Out dubbed Earl Scruggs the undisputed master of bluegrass music. That Monroe's is a household name among roots-oriented country fans, speaks to his endless touring, recording, and self-promotion, helped along by a battery of fine players. Fans of bluegrass and old-school country will enjoy this behind-the-scenes look at Monroe's storied career. Again, it's called Bill Monroe, The Life and Music of the Bluegrass Man, and it's by a fella that used to play with his group, Tom Ewing. Now we have time for one or two more books that are new at the North Carolina Library for the Blind. The first one is Paradise of Glass by Petra Durst Benning. Joanna, the oldest of the three Steinman sisters, has successfully managed the family glass-blowing business since her father's death, and her sister Marie's artistic gifts have made their wares unexpectedly famous. But now the livelihood of the town of Loska, Germany, known around the world as the Paradise of Glass, is in danger. The local glassworks is about to be sold, and rumor has it the buyer wants to make changes that will challenge glass-blowing tradition. Well, Wanda, the daughter of the middle Steinman sister, is freshly arrived from America and engaged to an ambitious local glass-blower. Yet as soon as the bold young woman learns of the impending sale, she decides to do as her mother and aunts did, cast aside her expected role in order to save the day. With the help of a handsome young bank clerk, she will take a daring risk with the villagers' hard-earned money. Just like glass, though, love and commerce are fragile, and what begins as their last hope may just end in shattered dreams. Again, that one is called The Paradise of Glass by Petra Durst Benning. And one more, Death at Nuremberg, The Enemy of My Enemy by W.E.B. Griffin, very popular author. Special Agent James Cronley Jr. finds that fighting both ex-Nazis and the Soviet NKGB can lead to strange bedfellows in the dramatic new clandestine operations novel about the birth of the CIA and the Cold War. I think you'll enjoy that one as well. It's brand new at the North Carolina Library for the Blind. Again, it's called Death at Nuremberg, The Enemy of My Enemy by W.E.B. Griffin. And that is just about all the time we have for this month's edition of Heard Any Good Books Lately? I'm George Douglas. I hope you enjoyed it. If you'd like more information about how to become a patron of the North Carolina Library for the Blind and Physically Handicapped, simply Google or search for the North Carolina Library for the Blind, or you can call toll-free at 888-388-2460. Again, that's 888-388-2460. Now, you can also use these same numbers and website to join the Friends of the North Carolina Library and Physically Handicapped. It is that wonderful organization that sponsors this monthly feature on books. This program is intended for people who are blind and visually impaired. Heard Any Good Books Lately will be available right after the broadcast on our website, TriangleReadingService.org. Thanks for joining me today, and so long until next time.